Okay.
I put on a post-it. Chazayin. After, if I will get caught for one day, suddenly in the hand of Shaul, ain li tov. Nothing good is going to happen to that. Rather, ki himaleit imaleit el eretz plishtim. I will run away. I will escape to the land of plishtim. V'no'ash mimeni Shaul levakseni od v'chol gvul Yisrael, and Shaul will, from Yish, will give up running after me. V'nimlas ki miyado, and I'll run away from him, I'll escape from his hand. Now, notice he says escape a lot of different times and a lot of different ways there. He says the word himaleit imaleit, no'ash, I will give up, and nimlasiti, and I will escape, I will get away from him. So David is trying to look to escape. So what does he do? V'yakam David, Vayavorhu v'sheishmeot ish asher imo el achish ben ma'och melech gat. So David goes and he runs away and he brings the 600 men to Achish, the king of Gat. Now, obviously, the Mepharshim explained this, the commentaries explained that it's pretty clear that beforehand he sent a message, can I come, etc., etc. That is interesting. David would go to Achish, the king of Gat. Why is that uniquely interesting?
Can he just kill Goliath?
Well,
and
the word just is kind of hard.
Well, no, I don't mean just this minute, but he was fighting the Philistines all the time.
Right.
He was running towards them.
And all of a sudden...
Not the first time he went to them.
Right.
Last time when he went to them, he was crazy.
Correct. He had to remember the last... Very good. The last time he went to them, he had to feign insanity in order to get out of being killed. So why would it be any different this time?
He's not... Well, he's got 600 men following him. He's not crazy.
Right. This time he's bringing his own personal army. That's absolutely correct. What?
All the people become a sort of misfits.
You think so?
Wasn't that what it said originally?
At the time, originally. We're going to see. It is
how
very
many
interesting.
How many people was that in the beginning?
It was 600. Didn't we say he got it?
Right now he's got 600.
How many was it in the beginning?
I thought it was like 50.
200 maybe?
Is that, man?
Remember, when did the misfits start? Remember when he started and he ran away and all the misfits came 40, to him?
No.
How many? 40? Anybody remember? Remember?
In 23:13.
Okay. What does it say?
David and his men, about 600 men.
No, before that.
I think he said last week there were 40.
I thought he
said that number 6 again.
Hold on a second. 22.
Here
we are.
400. Man,
chapter 22, verse 2.
Started out with 400.
That's not bad. And now he's all the way up to 600. What does that tell you? That's not such good numbers, if you ask. That's not such good numbers.
How long of a time?
Considering he said these two stunning victories.
Right, meaning he's got these stunning victories against...
Shaul.
Well, I don't know if I would consider them stunning, but he said military victories. He's got out and beat the Philistine, you know. He's got a mercenary army.
But how many casualties would you have in each?
Yeah, how many casualties?
So that's a good question. What? Yeah, that's a good point. They don't really talk very often about casualties. When they lose, then they lose big.
Right.
Right. When they win, they don't really talk about casualties.
Where are these extra 200 people from? Same
wherever. We're going to see. I think that there are many, many more than 600. I'm not entirely sure. We're going to have to find out why it talks about 600 specifically. It's a very good question. Okay. Back to chapter 27, verse 3. Vayeshev David im Achish begat. Who v'anashav ish uveito? Now it gets interesting, because it's not just David; it's he and his men, ish and all the men and their uveito, their families. So why would they bring their families with them to God?
They're moving.
They're settling.
Why?
Because Saul would kill their family.
Correct. It's very clear that they were afraid for the lives of their families. I mean, where are you going to leave your family? You ever see war movie with, what's his name, with Jesus, Mel Gibson? The Patriot, right, the Patriot. What happened, when the British guy, I don't know how factual that was, probably happened before then, but the British guy wanted to get their attention, right, he burned down the city, and that got their attention. And so people really started fearing for their families. You had to hide away your families. It's very true. How do you protect your family if you're out of war? And we're going to see, by the way, that this comes back to haunt them. In addition, what else does it say if they're moving their families?
They're not going back.
That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? You know, we know what the end of the story is, but if you're David, how long is it going to take for Shaul to die? How long is it going to take?
Who knows?
Right? You're promised the kingdom. So now how old is David now? He's almost 30, because we know that he reigns for 40 years and he takes the job at 30. So he's almost 30. Just quite 30. Shaul is, how old did we say he was? 50 maybe? I don't remember exactly. How long could he live for?
Another 30 years.
He could be a depressed king for years. And then his son, I mean, you know, so what do? You're going to run for your whole life? You're going to run forever? No, the men are getting sick of it, and they're getting tired of it. See, what do the men want to do?
Kill
Saul. Yeah, they want to end it.
Ready for the big fight.
And so they say, let's go, let's finish it off already. And David keeps pushing them off. So then, if he's going to keep pushing them off, then it's time to settle down. It's time to move on. Now, let's just finish the passage. David, David with his two wives, Achinoam Yisraelit, Avigail Eshet Naval HaKarmelit. Achinoam the Israelite, and Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. Now, I'm just reading this now. I didn't strike me before, but it does seem unusual that...
He has a second wife. Can you hear about it?
No, that's not unusual. He had a number of wives. What seems unusual? When you marry the guy, the lady, after her husband dies, you call her, Jane, former wife of Bob, my wife. This is a little interesting. Anybody have anything to say about that? Any comments?
It's just reminding you of this story.
Yeah, just in case you forgot. It's just that she's Eshet Nava. I don't know. Okay.
That's weird.
Now,
maybe because the lesson that she taught him in the situation of Nabal, which was...
I don't know.
That's very generous and positive thinking of you.
Rabbi, I don't know if you mentioned it or not.
Whatever. Part of the message.
It's all good. I mean, fine. It's just weird.
I wasn't here when you were learning that with his wife, about... What's his name again?
Right. Nabal.
But he... said a derogatory thing about David.
Right.
And that was that he comes from, this lineage going back to...
Bad stock.
Bad stock. It's not a true thing. I don't know if you mentioned that or not.
We went through the whole thing. Yeah, so therefore, why would you mention his... Meaning, that would be another reason to mention him, right, And Abigail, the wife of that scumball, that's basically what it is. Abigail, the wife of the scumball, who he married.
Emphasize that his legitimacy. He's trying to emphasize his legitimacy.
It's the author. It's the writer. It's the narrator.
The author is giving David legitimacy.
Actually, the author is giving David legitimacy very strongly. It's very apologetic. Have you noticed it's very apologetic? Look at it objectively. What would happen if, what would you expect David to do? And now you say, well, what does David do? He picks up and he moves out of the country and he settles, not just in a country. Where does he settle? What would be an equivalent today? A guy's, the Plishtim are words of the enemy. Goliath came from the enemy. And remember, the Plishtim are oppressing the Jewish people incessantly with taxes, with raids. Think about the way... It's not that way today, but you have to remember there weren't very specific borders. It was just kind of nebulous, and if you could plunder this group and take their stuff and kill them, then you would. And better for me, I got more produce, I got more taxes, I got more stuff. And so, how does it look when David goes ahead and settles? He took his families, he took the people, and they went to the land of the Plishtim.
Looks like a traitor.
Yeah, he doesn't only look like a traitor. We're going to see. He seems to act like a traitor. I mean, he goes to the enemy and he asks for asylum. That's basically what he does. So the only question is, why did David do such a thing? So the author of the Navi, you just have to note it, says that he does it out of his own self-interest and he does it really out of compassion for Shaul. I don't want to fall into Shaul's hands. I don't want to get into a fight with him. But the only place I can run that'll leave me alone is where? The police did. Why will Shaul leave him alone? Most specifically? Two things. One?
Shaul's not going to come fight the police.
Why?
They're strong.
They're strong. He's afraid of them. Why else? It's Shaul's greatest dream if David commits treason.
Because everybody will turn against
him. Yeah, I told you that guy was good for nothing after all. He wasn't good for anything. See, you know, you see, it's just proof in the pudding that if that low down, good for nothing, David, he really wasn't. He wasn't acting your best interest in the first place. Pasuk David. Vayugad Shaul ki barach David Gat. So Shaul heard that David fled to Gat. V'lo yisaf o debaksho. So what Shaul say? Done. Right. Forget it. And we see they never saw each other again. So you could say the author of the Navi has the Ruach HaKodesh has the divine inspiration to know that David's best interest is positive. But if you're living in that time, it's not necessarily so clear that everybody knows what's going on and what's going on in David's heart. And, you know, it looks really, really bad. It looks treasonous. It looks traitorous. And you have to identify it as such. Pasukei. Vayamar David el Achish. So David said to Achish, Imna matasichein be'inecha yitnu li makom be'achat arei hasada ve'eshva sham. So they're all living in Gat, in the main city, in the capital city. So he says, do me a favor. It's not good here. Right? So give me a city where I can dwell. V'lama yeshev abdecha be'ir hamamlacha imach. Why should I dwell in the capital city with you? Why would David want to move?
If he changes his mind, David is dead.
Well, David's got 600 men.
Yeah, but he's got a whole army and everything else. But if you're okay...
Oh, that's just a different question. Why did Achish say yes?
So not to look like he's ingratiating himself with the enemy? Is David asking to sort of be separated so it doesn't look as bad as it's...
No, beforehand, why would Achish... I'm sorry. When David sends a message saying, I'm looking for asylum, why would Achish say yes? Here's a mortal enemy. He killed his best warrior. This guy killed thousands. They said, remember what they say about David? Saul kills the thousands. Thousands of what?
Philistine.
And David kills his?
One
day, let's remember the phrase they used to say. Saul kills his thousands. And David kills his 10,000s. Of Philistine. Can you imagine some guy, you know, Osama bin Laden calls up one day and says, oh, by the way, I'm having a little trouble in Afghanistan. They've decided they don't like me anymore. I'm seeking political asylum because I'm being persecuted in Afghanistan. The only country in the world that might just very well say yes is the United States of America. Because we're just that nice. But you know, and that's exactly what it is. You kill tens of thousands of citizens, and along comes the king of the police and says, come on in, sure, what the heck.
Yeah, but David's also the enemy. Isn't it the phrase, the enemy of my enemy is my friend? So if David is asking for asylum, he'll come here to Achish.
Uh-huh.
Achish will give him asylum. And this way he can keep his eye on what David's doing and perhaps keeping him at arm's distance so he doesn't ingratiate himself to all of the rest of the people to overturn him.
Seems like a very volatile situation.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it?
It does, but if you're going to keep him, if you're going to say yes to him,
uh-huh,
for whatever political motivation, you also don't want to keep him too close so that he could have a chance to find favor in the eyes of all the people, the residents.
Right.
Keep him away.
Do you guys have the Radak on your thing? You have Radak?
Yeah.
Achish thinks that he came over to the dark side. Well, hey, so you could say to yourself, well, Achish figured to himself that he knows what's going on. Everybody knows that Shaul's been persecuting him. So he figures, after being pushed and pushed and pushed, how much can a guy take? So here, I get a free army. Not only do I get a free army, I get a really good free army.
Right, that's what I mean.
As we'll soon see. Read the Radak. Look at the Radak in Pasuk Aleph. It says, El Achish ben Ra'uch Melech Gat. You see where it says the Radak on Aleph?
Mm-hmm.
As a bet?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, bet. Yesh lish'ol. I have a question. Hayach halach elad. How did he go there? B'hu ayakvar b'sakana imo. He was in such danger. Ad shehit holel v'nimlak misham. Until he had to act like he was nuts, right, and escape. V'yesh lefaresh. I can explain. Ki b'pah mahi haya David levado. At that time, David was alone. V'itaker sham, and he just showed up there. U'kisha ra'ah shehiki ruhu, and when he was recognized, pachad, he was afraid. Avata ba b'sheish meod ish. Now he has 600 men. The Kodesh Shnichnas v'gat shalach la'achish. Before he got to God, he sent a message. Kihit ba'esh b'sha'ul u'be'amo. He sent a message that he's sick of Shaul and he's sick of his people. The in Yitzer, Yeshev, Imo, who, and if he wants, he's willing to dwell with him. The Ya'azelu Lihilachain B'Yisrael. And he would help him fight against the Jews. So David, according to Radak, David actually sent a message. Was it perceived treason?
It was treason.
It was treason.
Nice.
I got enough of this. I'm tired of it.
Well, it's made to appear that it's treason.
Well, you don't believe for a moment that David is committing treason.
No. He's making, right here it says, Saul found out where he went and said, okay, I have it, enough. Because that's what he wanted. He wanted to go to a place where Saul would say, no, I've had enough. That's it.
There's no better way than committing perceived treason for your own people?
Well, he kept on going, in hiding in the forest, and people kept on telling him where he is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're probably right. You won't confront your enemy, you won't fight him, but you can't run away from him. So what do?
I mean, strategically, this is a pretty good idea.
It's like a Trojan horse.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how, so the question is then, why does David decide to leave God? Why does he want to leave God? If you look on your map, see the map on page one. So look at line, he goes from 15 to 16. See where number 15 is to 16? He goes to God. God is outside of the land of Israel. Now, just so you have a sense of Israel today, do you know where it ends? Where the Mediterranean Sea is in Israel?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the Mediterranean Sea, Miriam?
Here, would it be here?
Where's the Mediterranean Sea be?
Just try to open it up here. It's here.
Correct. It's off your page. It's right off your page. It's on the left off of your page. God, see where Siklag, see where Beersheba is? Just so you get Beersheba is directly south of Gat. If you get Beersheba, Gat, Yerushalayim. See that line? Right? So you'll know Beersheba is about halfway across the country. So the whole land of Israel was half of what it is today. Ironically, the whole land of Israel is the entire occupied territories that are not the land of Israel today. Right? When you go to Israel and you want to go on a tour, when they take you to Yehuda Shomron, they call it Eretz HaTanach, the land of the Tanakh. Because pretty much all of the biblical stories occurred in that land. If we have any claim to any land that should be ours, you'll notice all of it. Look at where David went. He's crisscrossing what we would call today, quote unquote, occupied territory. So anyway, David goes to Gat. Gat today is a modern Israeli city called Kiryat Gat. It's on the way. If you ever travel on the direct bus from Yerushalayim to Beersheba, which I did many, many, many times because my uncle lived in Beersheba, it stops in one place. It stops in Kiryat Gat. Now, there is a faster way to get to Beersheba. What is the fastest way to get to Yerushalayim from Yerushalayim to Beersheba?
I never drove.
Look at the road. Right. You go straight from Yerushalayim, Hebron, Beersheba. There's only one problem today. Why don't they go there with Hebron? Because it's quote-unquote occupied territory. So that's why they go around all the way down to Gat and straight around. You can say, you can make it if you go there to Hebron and you have no problems, probably in 45 minutes to an hour. Not that long of a trip. Anyway, but I digress. So David goes to Gat, and he says to the king of Gat, things aren't working out so well. I'd like to go on my own. Why does David say that? One of two possible reasons.
He doesn't want to live amongst them so that his men and his families don't develop their customs.
Spiritual reasons, right. That's definitely true. Yalkut Shimon, he quotes that as the second reason. What do you think is the first reason?
If he's under supervision all the time, then he has to act a certain way. He has to go out.
He doesn't have to be a pagan.
No, not pagan-wise. He actually has to go. Like the king could say, okay, I need you to go do this raid for me.
Uh-huh.
Things like that. He's under the military control. If
okay.
he goes away, he can make it look like he's doing stuff like that when he's really not.
All right. Okay. What else? Give me another reason.
He doesn't want to see what he's going to do.
Okay. That's similar to what Grabby was saying. Let me ask you this question. Imagine the following. Okay? Now it's going to get even more interesting. Osama bin Laden calls up George Bush and says, not only would I like asylum, me and 1,000 of my mujahideen were wondering if we could camp out on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Safety.
So, and George Bush says, sure, no problem whatsoever.
Okay.
So you've got 1,000 mujahideen and Osama bin Laden camped out in front of the White House.
and you have to provide them food, and you have to provide
The logistics are not
water, and you have to provide all the
input. And the inauguration would be a nightmare with all those who have been. Right? But forget the safety of, let's say I know Osama bin Laden is a nice guy, and he really is not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
How do people in the Pentagon feel?
Quite right. Threatened completely.
Right. The safety of David and his men from the Plishtim.
Forget. Right. Meaning, I'm not even safety. How would you feel? You happen to be the king's, minister of defense, chief of staff, some colonel in the army, and the king. What does he do? He brings in your arch enemy and 600 tough armed men with him. And says, sure, I'll come live in the capital city.
An accident waiting to
come. Have a party. What did you say?
Feel like
human. It's a Trojan horse. Hey, what are we, nuts? Are we crazy? And what?
These are the people that killed all of your sons and daughters. Why do you want them in there?
It is interesting to note, this is a very short paragraph. I'm sure you all looked ahead and noticed a very short chapter. Mm-hmm. The Navi does not elaborate very much on what happened to David in Gat. We don't really know. But you have to start to imagine to yourself, what happened? You know, he went to the grocery store and he asked for change. And, you know, what did the lady say to him? You know, how would our arch enemy be received as you're walking around the city? As, you know, what do people perceive of you? How are your families getting along? How's it going?
Completely.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You can imagine, you know, like your wife goes and, you know, she just wants to get the dry cleaning and she, you know, and it's like, I can't even imagine. It's hard to imagine this kind of scenario because it's so crazy. It's so unbelievably crazy. So he says, you know what, maybe it would be better if I left. And the king says, you know what, maybe it would be better if you left, you know. Pasuk Vav Achish Bayom Hahu et Siklag. Achish gives him Siklag. Until this very day, meaning from then on, Siklag was considered to be a Judean city.
So you get the impression he was there for a while and then said, let me move somewhere else?
What do you get?
I don't know.
Not 10 minutes. You get the impression that they had settled for a little while. Well, we're going to see how long, we are going to see exactly how long he was there. Yeah, we're going to see exactly how long, the next pasuk. Vahi mispar hayamim asher yashab David b'shtei plishtim, Yamim ve'arba'a chadashim. What's unusual there?
Why would you say add the 2 days?
Yamim ve'arba'a chadashim. No, forget English. Read in Hebrew. What does it mean? Yamim ve'arba'a chadashim.
And 4 months.
Days and 40 months.
Days and 4 months. Now, there's only one problem with that. What the heck does that mean?
Right.
Yamim. What?
More than one.
Yamim ve'arba'a chadashim. So, why in the world would, what is the author trying to convey?
Maybe
so,
he was in Gat for 2 days and Ziklag for 4 months.
Is he talking about Gat or talking about Ziklag? Or both?
He said, dwelled in the field.
Wasn't it be that the days were so important or bad for him there and he only lasted 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
You
the idea of Yamin implies a certain terseness, a certain shortness. Mm-hmm. I think Eddie's very perceptive about this. You're absolutely right. He stayed there Yamin. How long was Yamin?
40.
4 months. It wasn't too long. Meaning, I'm just trying to, I think that the author of the Navi is trying to sort of say, don't think about it as being this crazy thing. He didn't stay there that long. It wasn't a big deal. But it was a big deal.
That's true.
Yeah. Now Rashi says, by the way, some say, the Radak I think says, that it was a year. Yamin means a year. A year and 4 months. Remember, was it Radak? I'm sorry. I would have a person called the Maharikara. I don't know who that is. He says it's a year and 4 months. But all Rashi goes crazy, and Rashi says this whole timeline.
That's
you guys have it in English?
That's Radak who says that.
What, that it's a year and 4 months? You can't say. So Radak quotes Rashi and says you cannot say that Yamin means a year. Maybe the art scroll, does the scroll do it in English?
Harikara also says it's a year. Yeah,
right. Does the scroll do it in English? A year and 4 days, or days and 4 days?
Well, it talks about Saul's reign is only 4 months after...
Right. So the Rashi explains, if you go through the timeline, the reign of Saul only lasts 4 months after the death of Shmuel. And we're going to see that the reason why David ran away is because Shmuel died. Remember, Shmuel died last chapter, and that was his great opportunity to go confront Saul, and nothing happened with that. So then he ran away, and Saul was killed 4 months later. So it couldn't be a year and 4 months. It had to be 4 months. So if it can't be a year, then why does it say it like that? What does it mean, Yamin? So I think that Eddie's right. I think that it means Yamin. I mean, it's not that long. It's just a little bit of time. It's only 4 months. Mm-hmm. But then it's just another example of the, I guess, pseudo-apologetics that we're kind of getting. You know, he really wasn't so bad, don't think he was so crazy, et cetera, et cetera.
And he wasn't a traitor for that long.
Right. Pasuk Chet. Vayal David va'anasha. So David gets busy. Vayishetu et gishagushuri v'hagrizi v'ha'amaliki. David, vayishetu, lahashit, literally means to skin, to flay. How do they translate that in the scroll?
Raid.
What?
Raid.
He raided. Okay. What it really means is, how do you translate it? Raid. He slaughtered them. He destroyed them. Why? Ki hem yoshvot ha'aretz asher me'olam bo'achas shura bat eretz Mitzrayim. Because they were dwelling in the land from the place of Shura, from Syria, until the land of Egypt. Can you just read that last passage from in English, please? They dwell in the land.
The original inhabitants of land.
Middle inhabitants, right, go on.
Where you approach Shur until the land of Egypt.
Right, so there's this whole strip of land from, I don't even know where Shur is, all the way down to Egypt, and there were these roving nomadic tribes, the Grizi, the Chavi, and the Amaleki. What's so special about the Amaleki?
Oh, Amaleki.
Supposed to kill them all.
What?
They were supposed to kill them all.
And? Saul did not. Now, it's clear that Saul did not just not kill them, that Saul didn't just leave the king, because there were, you wouldn't get a whole tribe of Amalekis if you only left the king over. You know, how much longer is this after that? It's a year later? Mm-hmm. You don't build up a whole tribe a year later. But it is interesting that David kills the Amalekim. And what does he do? The Hikad David et Haaretz. He smote the land. V'lo yechaya ish v'isha. All of them, men and women. Okay. V'lakach tzon uvakar v'chamarim ugmalim ubegadim. He took the sheep and the cattle and the donkeys and the camels, tzon uvakar and cattle and camels, and v'yashav v'yavo el achish. And he would bring it back to Achish. So what did David do?
Kill all the people.
He brought the spoils to Achish.
Right. So he would go from Chiklag. Go out and decide, you know, who he's going to slam today, right? Smite some
psychological.
Smite some tribe, steal all their stuff, and then bring it to the king of Achish. So, what does Achish know?
We tell
that's
him.
What
does
he tell him? And that you're bringing tribute, you're bringing wealth, you're bringing riches, you're bringing your
loyalty.
Who's he getting it from?
Who? Achish or David?
What's that?
Enemies of Israel.
Correct. But what does Achish think?
Getting into Israel.
David is loyal to him and is bringing him tribute and
he's a shepherd.
Him.
Does Achish care?
Probably not.
That's right.
He's getting more stuff.
Does Achish want to know? As long as it's not Plishtim.
He doesn't care.
What is it about my people?
Don't ask
myself. Right. I don't really want to know where it's coming from. Now, who does he hope it's coming from? Who does he think it's coming from?
Jews.
He thinks it's coming, which I think it's pretty clear, he thinks it's coming from the Jews, that David has made his cut, he's made his break, and enough is enough. So it's interesting, you don't think so?
No. It says here that David would be crazy to tell him what he was really doing. It would make him so angry.
Why?
Not because obviously he did care where it came from.
Right, so I'm saying you think that Achish knew, or you think that Achish did not know where it really came from?
He heard what he wanted to hear.
Right.
Oh.
Right, so Achish did not know.
David couldn't come right out and say what he was doing.
He didn't say anything.
Right.
He said, I brought this for you, King. You know, like, I think there was... You ever see Lawrence of Arabia? Anybody ever see it other than me? Mm-hmm. Watched it? So there's this sort of, there's this friendship but diplomacy. You know, mm-hmm. I respect you from a distance. And your job is to bring me stuff, and my job is not to ask you any questions.
Mm-hmm. Is Achish afraid of him? Could he destroy Achish if he wanted to?
Achish has thousands of men, but I think the answer still is yes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's afraid of him. So he's really kind of happy that he's on his side. And one gets a sense that he kind of wants to believe that he's on his side, too. You know, because this life is easier without having to deal with this guy, David. Yeah.
I thought that only for Amalek we have to kill all of them. I never
right.
heard for the Gishuri.
So why did David not leave any witnesses?
So that nobody could say where the stuff came from.
That's what it says. Where would I see that somewhere? It's,
and it says the man or women. And for Amalek, you're supposed to kill the children, too.
I think that was included, to be honest with you. I think
that
was
right. Number 9.
If David is, if David's not saying where the spoils are coming from, and Achish doesn't want to know, so you get rid of everybody so that nobody can tell where it really came from. Let Achish think it,
he says,
it comes from the...
He says, but the reason why they haven't believed anybody, Radak says, they couldn't protect themselves because nobody knew what was happening. He didn't let anybody live. Now, it's just, it's hard for us to imagine. It's a very brutal time.
It is, but on the other hand, if nobody, there are no survivors, you can continue to plunder and kill because there's nobody left to save.
It's not on the other hand, that's, you know, it's pretty brutal.
Absolutely.
He's also repairing them.
What?
He's taking advantage of the opportunity right now.
Yeah, but so, wasn't this land also the Palestinian... The
Philistine land?
Yeah, Philistine...
No, I guess, I don't know where it looks like. Turn to the other...
You know,
turn to the other side.
Got bouncy from
there. To the other side. See the picture? I mean, I was trying to figure out where it was. A lot of these places, they don't know really where it is. Okay? But you'll see, look to... let's look at Pasuk Yud for a second. Pasuk Yud. Vayomer Achish... I'll pitashtem hayom. It's a question, meaning, like Achish, when he would see David, and David was like hanging around at the Schwitz one day, he would say to him, "No, didn't you go fight today? Haven't you brought me any stuff?" Vayomer David, "Al negev Yehuda." Yeah, I went to negev Yehuda. Al negev Yerach Ne'eli. Al negev Hakein. I went to all these negevs. You can look where the negevs are. I went to Negev Keni, Negev Yerach Me'eli, I went to Negev, the Negev was divided into all of these different areas. So he doesn't tell him, you know, where who he killed.
Mm-hmm.
What's the implication?
The implication is that Achish will believe that he
wants.
Right, I'm wiping out the Jews. And what's he doing all the while?
He's wiping out the enemies of the Jews.
He's solidifying, right, he's wiping out the enemies of the Jews.
Because when Shaul dies, there's going to be a problem. He's not going to be a king. All these enemies could decide to attack Israel when Shaul's gone.
Mm-hmm.
He's making sure that he has the time to solidify the throne so that these guys...
It is pretty sophisticated,
yeah.
You know. Under the guise and subterfuge of treason, under the protection of a foreign enemy, he's going back into his own land and killing his own enemies.
Right.
This is our greatest warrior we're talking about.
Right.
Pretty good.
Exactly.
That's not bad.
He doesn't figure it out at any point.
Achish?
Yeah.
He's had those
money. He's thinking of...
I think that Achish, as long as the money keeps coming... You know, it's like,
for trouble.
You think the UN didn't know that Saddam Hussein was still selling oil for whatever, for weapons or whatever it was. So you know what the answer is?
You lined your pockets and looked the other way.
That's right.
I don't see anything, you know.
Oh, gee, where did this herd of sheep come from?
You know, right.
I'm real happy.
I think he was very happy. Right. Like you said, you know, it's almost like Lahabdil, like Bush decided they're going into Iraq. So when the CIA came into evidence... Right? Was the evidence? Was there a preponderance of evidence that he was developing weapons of mass destruction? No.
There was some evidence.
No, you know. So he saw that they, you know, they had a microwave in some food court somewhere, and he said, "Oh, a microwave can be used as a centrifuge." And you know what I'm saying? You see what you want to see. And I think that we all do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very hard to look at something factually and objectively when you have a vested interest. And that's why it's never good to get involved in things that you have a vested interest in. You always want somebody to look at it as an objective third party and say, you know, and sort of remove yourself. Just as an aside, that's why I always, you know, whenever I'm visiting somebody in the hospital and they're by themselves, sometimes it will happen, I always want to make sure that there's somebody else, some family member, maybe perhaps even a friend, who can talk to the doctors. Because when, you know, when you're sick and you're talking to the doctors, you don't hear everything the way somebody who's listening objectively hears it. You just don't. But I digress. Okay. Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'ish v'isha lo yechaya David. So David did not leave any man or woman. Lahavi got to bring back to God leimor. Pen yagidu aleinu leimor. I don't want to present anybody to get back to God and say, Ko asa David v'cho mishpato. Ko hayamim asher yasha b'stei plishtim. Right? So the Navi tells you quite clearly, why does David kill every man and every woman?
Yeah, I wish that he wouldn't.
No witnesses. If there are no witnesses, then Achish never knows where everything is coming from. And he doesn't want to know, and everything is good. So David, all the while, is clearing out his own country, paying tribute to the king of the Philistine, avoiding Shaul, doing great things. Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayamin Achish b'David leimor. So Achish really believed in David, saying, "Had esh hivish ba'amo b'Yisrael." He has tired. He has abandoned, maybe? What's the word they use? That David has...
Abhor.
What? Abhor. He hates Israel. V'haya li le'eved olam. And he is forever indebted to me. Why would Achish think that David is forever indebted to him?
Can't go back.
Why?
Because he's his own people.
Correct. You kill that first Jew, you can never go back. So the Achish, the Mora, thinks that David is... he's plundering his own people. So once he's plundered his own people, then he has this indentured servant. Seems to work. It's a very interesting plan. David, you know, David's walking, you know, both sides of the tracks.
Do you have communication in the country? He doesn't hear a rumor that these towns are being wiped out?
I think there's nobody to spread the rumor.
Well, no, one second. It's not
like
his people. No.
To deliver the mail and
no, you're missing something. It's not his people.
Even you would hear in the general area, you would hear about a village.
In 4 months? In 4 months?
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, but by that time, the next village is gone also. But
nobody knows, by the way, nobody knows who's doing it.
Yeah, but after a few, okay.
You know what? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, how long do you expect it to last?
It's an internet virus. You can't, it's a word.
I agree with you. I think it's, how long do you want it to last?
Even if Achish figured it out, the bounty is coming to him.
Right.
No, I mean, it's quite clear David does not want him to know, because David, as soon as, let's say, forget the bounty, as soon as Achish finds out that David's not killing his own people, then what does he know?
He knows that David really is loyal to
David.
Saul
is not loyal to him.
His days are numbered.
Correct.
By Achish.
He knows that David, he's been harboring an enemy who never recanted, who lied to him in the first place,
mm-hmm.
who's been lying to him all along.
He knew exactly what he was doing. He knew who to go to. He knew he could pull the wall over and go.
Now, what about David in the eyes of his own people? What happened to David in the eyes of his own people?
The
Jews, not the 600. The 600 with him, things are good. We're winning. We're killing people. Right. It seems that way. You would think that. Look at Divrei HaYamim. So, Eddie, this is the thing. You always nudged me. I want to know. Divrei HaYamim is a very interesting book. Because it's not really a story. It's kind of snippets of events. Divrei HaYamim in English is chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What are chronicles? Stuff.
Newspapers. Or the accounting of what's going
stuff. You always going to try as much as possible to supplement what's going on in the Navi with what's going on in Divrei HaYamim if you can find it. So this is the first time, because Divrei HaYamim really begins with the kingdom of David. So this is the first time we really see anything that's going on in Divrei HaYamim, and it's very interesting. Says the Navi. Ve'elu haba'im el David b'tziklag od asur mitnei Shaul ben Kish. These are the people that came to David in Ziklag when he was shut out, while he was kept himself shut out because of Shaul, the son of Kish. V'heima b'giborim ozrei hamilchama. These are the people who are the giborim, the strong ones, the helpers of the war. Noskei keshet. They were armed with bows, miyamanim u'mismalim ba'avanim u'bachrifim u'bakashet. You could use both right hand and left hand,
wow,
swinging stones and shooting arrows from the bow. I lost my place. Ne'achei Shaul mi'abinyamin. They were the Shaul's brethren of Binyamin. So what did the Navi just say?
Shaul's own people joined David.
Correct. You think David and his 600 men were in Ziklag, so let's think of another reason why David would want to go to Ziklag and create his own little city in Ziklag.
Get more people to come over there.
He could build a city in Ziklag. He's away from Achish. He could do whatever that he wants.
Rumor hits around in Israel that David has left. He's setting up his own shop someplace.
Correct.
All the people who don't like Shaul are going to start coming.
What do you know about Shaul? And what do you know about Shaul?
Shaul's not going to go into Plishtim territory to start.
What else do you know about Shaul?
Pretty suspicious.
He's nuts. He is susceptible to bouts of melancholy. He's more interested in obsessed with killing his general than he is with the welfare of the people. You know? Will you go into battle behind this guy? So, you know, if people in Binyamin are abandoning, it's very serious. So now you'll start to see why Divrei HaYamim is hard to follow. Pasuk Gimel. Harosh Achiezer, the head, the Yoash b'nei Hashma'a Gibati, the Yizuel v'Pelet b'nei Azmavet u'Bracha v'Yehu Ein Toti. I'm not going to translate. You can follow. I'm Pasuk David. V'Yashma'a Hagivoni Gibor Bashlishim v'Lo Al Hashlishim. Right? He's a man among 30 and over 30. ויומיה ויחזיאל ויוחנן ויוזבד הגדירתי אלוזי וירימות ועל יאו שמריהו שרקיהו החליפי. So now you understand why people never learn Diva Hayyanin straight. You know, it's a little dry. Okay? Let's skip a little bit. Pasuk Tet, verse 9. Umin ha-gadi from tribe of God, yivdilu al-David lamchad mi-bara, gibor ha-chayel anshei tshuva le-milchama archei tshina v'romach. Men of might, a man of war after battle, who could handle a shield and spear. Upnei aryei pneihem, they were faces of lions. And he was swift as the rose upon the mountain. Meaning, who came to David?
The Marines.
They're like, you know,
the fittest, the best.
Yeah.
Strongest.
Yeah, there's only one problem. It's interesting. David has only one problem with this little new phenomenon. What problem would he have?
Are they loyal to him?
Yeah, right, you know. There's all this, you know, this subterfuge and espionage and counter-espionage going on. So, like, you know, 300 strong men show up one day and say, where were you?
That's a good reason to make them go kill people.
They can kill who?
They'll kill
Amalek, no problem. That doesn't tell anything.
Hey,
that's what David knows. I can kill Amalek from here to tomorrow. It won't mean anything. That's why he does it.
If they were just there for surveillance.
David is an expert on subterfuge, so he knows they could, that's why he's trying to smell them up.
Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayavol min v'nei Binyamin v'Yehuda ad lamtzar lamtzar to David. The people from Binyamin Yehuda came until the stronghold to David. It's already a stronghold, right? What does David have? He doesn't have a city in Chiklag. What does he have?
A stronghold.
He's got an army base. You know, a fort, Siklag. Vayetei David b'snehem vayan vayomer lahem. So David says to them, Im l'shalom ba'ten elai la'azreni. If you have come to me in peace, yihieli aleichem levav liyachad. Then we will be of one heart. Ve'im l'ramotani v'tzarai, v'lo chamas kapai, yere Elohe avoteinu v'yochach. But if you come to betray me to my enemies, seeing there was no wrong in my hands, let the God of our fathers see and rebuke you. So who does David invoke? God. He says, I don't know, I can't know, but if you come to mess me over, God's going to get you. And if between you and me, I think the people believed him. You know what I'm saying? Meaning, they felt that God was on David's side. The thing that drew them to him was that David had God in his hands. What else did David have, by the way? Very important thing. You cannot overlook it that he had
the iPhone.
He had the iPhone. He had the phone with God. He had the red phone. Right? Very important. Cannot be overlooked. He had the Kohen who had the iPhone. He could communicate with God. You can't overlook that. So he is on God's side. Pasuk Yud-Tet. The Ruach Lavsha et Amashai Rosh HaShalishim Lecha David V'imcha Ben Yishai Shalom Shalom Lach. You should have peace with you, v'shalom lo zmecha. Peace with your helpers. Ki azarcha elohecha. Because your God has helped you. Vayikablem David vayidnein b'roshei hagdud. David took them in and made them captains of the band. Meaning, the reason why I started at the beginning, I said the 600 men is it can't be. Because you get this sense that Shaul is like bleeding warriors. You know, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And remember how we said at the very end that David realized when he sent that spear back to Shaul that he would gain more power by withdrawing than he would by imposing himself upon Shaul. What would have happened if David had killed Shaul that day?
Maybe civil war.
There would have been civil, absolutely.
Civil war, tribal warfare, who's in control, total free-for-all.
Anarchy.
That's exactly what happened. Like you have in Iraq now.
Mm-hmm.
You cut off the head of a leader,
and
you know, you got a chicken running around without a head.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think maybe it's like 600, each of these guys has their own little battalion under
right.
them? I think it's like 600 of the main guys.
It's hard to know, because whenever he keeps using the number 600, 600 will come back to us.
At 600.
We'll see it again. I mean, this is not more than 600, but it had to be. You know, it says, Rashi HaTava Echad L'me'ah HaKaton V'HaGadol La'alef. I remember verse 15. These are the sons of God, the captains of the host, The least was over 100, the greatest over 1,000. Who came to David? The officers. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're in a little army, and all of your officers flee and go to the other side, what do you do?
No.
Yeah. You know, so David is becoming, we see here, so the David's trying to show us that in withdrawal, David has become even more powerful to his people.
He's also weakening Shaul, though.
Mm-hmm.
He's weakening.
When he gets in the big fight with.
I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, it's unbelievable. He's weakening Shaul, his enemy. He's tricking the Plishtim, and he's fighting the tribes living in the land of Israel all at the same time. It's crazy, but brilliant all at the same time. I mean, it's amazing what he accomplishes, and all of this is in the chapter 12, Sukkim 1, because it doesn't look nice. It's a very short chapter. I wouldn't say it's the greatest chapter in military history for David. Because he has to go pretend to be an enemy of the Jewish people in order to accomplish what he needs to accomplish.
But he sure gets his point across.
Well, he gets the job done. So it is very interesting to see that as David sits in this Ziklag for these 4 months, he's growing in reputation, he's growing in popularity, he's growing in power. He is in exile, solidifying control over his own country. And nobody knows it more than Shaul. Shaul sees his power slipping away through his fingertips, and is absolutely nothing.
Do you think Shaul really realizes it with the depth of madness that he's in?
It's hard, you know. You don't really know. He's got the depression, the not depression, the yes, the no.
In the moments of lucidity.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he knows, and we're going to see how much he knows, how desperate he becomes. You know, and unfortunately, his desperation leads it to his downfall, his own destruction. Oh, what time is it? I don't know. We're good? All right, we'll stop here.